This is Jason Little, the world's greatest cold fusion developer, and you're listening to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I am tonight's co-host, Jay Hersko. And this evening, we're going to be talking about certificates and the future of Agile. This should be a fairly interesting discussion as we have a lot of really strong opinions. So first, let me introduce my co-host. Sitting with me is Troy Lightfoot.
Hello.
Troy is the Reverend of the Church of the Useless Sprint Retrospective. Next we have Andrew, I never skip chest day, Lef.
What's up?
And then we have James Gifford, captain of the SS Commando, which never met an iceberg. It did try to go straight through.
Yeah. Wait, I didn't get a cool name. I'm a little upset.
I am the Scramando. Deal with it.
And last but not least, we have Captain Hate himself, Ryan Locker.
You skip McCalla, just for the record.
We'll loop back and get him on the next round. All right, so let's start this one off. Where did this whole idea of a certification start? Gifford, you seem to be the historian, so give us a little bit of background for in case our users don't know. Where did all this begin?
So the Scrum Alliance certification around Scrum started after Ken started it in 2002. And if you want to hear about Ken having those conversations with some of the other manifesto signers, listen to the Uncle Bob podcast from our Agile manifesto signers. And he'll talk about green lighting Ken on this. And, talking with Alistair a bunch of different times, and I don't know if he mentioned it on his podcast or whether it was the Heart of Agile last year, but he also referenced the Ken talk and Ken coming to him and talking to him about offering a certification. So it was kind of a thing where they went around to all the original 17 and asked about the certification, and they all said, "Hey dude, it's your thing, like giddy up, go ahead and do this." So that might have been the beginning of the end if you're talking to some of us on the podcast.
I'm assuming the law of unintended consequences, nobody ever saw or thought that back then that it would become the cottage industry that it is now. So now we all know that there is a preponderance of certifications offered by PMI, offered by the Scrum Alliance, offered by Scaled Agile. I'm going to start with you, Andrew. Why do you think every group, every framework, every methodology, why do you think they offer a certification? What's the benefit there?
Well, doesn't certification mean you're an expert? So it sort of supports the premise that you're an expert at something. So I was resistant to certifications at first for a long time, just because, you know, I don't want to be measured on my alphabet soup after my name, more so on the value that I might bring to an organization. But that philosophy didn't quite work out so well. So it's become, you know, an industry draw to help promote or at least open the door. So I can see some of the value in getting certified to at least start the conversation. But I think with all the different certs out in the market today, it's becoming harder and harder to understand sort of what value, or after you get certified, what are you doing with that certification? So are you actually doing anything to add value and sort of promote, or are you just becoming certified to get the door open for a job? So I think that question is an interesting one. So are you really looking for people that truly invest in getting the certification for sort of learning, or are you looking just to look at people that are certified because they took the 2-day class and now are deemed an expert?
So wait, Andrew, you're basically positioning the way that people look at certs. Are they looking at certs as an end state or a starting point?
So I think that's a good question, Ryan. I think they're looking at it as a starting point. I mean, from my experience, I've seen a lot of people with and I'm going to pick on this one just because it's the first one that came into my head. You know, if you get your CSM, do you have any prior knowledge of actually being a Scrum Master? So after 2 days or whatever it is to get your CSM, do you really feel that you're a qualified Scrum Master in the industry to be able to truly embody the values of Scrum and coach a team to basically self-manage within some of that framework?
So let's take a step back then. Like, I think everybody kind of looks at certification differently, right? Like, some folks, yeah, they're looking to check a box, get it on their resume, create the alphabet soup after their name. And those folks, if you're in an organization and you're interviewing for somebody to function as a Scrum Master, for somebody to function on an Agile team in any capacity, and you can't figure that out as the interviewer, then you deserve everything that you get. I mean, you can look at certifications as an entry point into the world of Agile. You can look at it as part of your continuum of growth, or you can look at it at the end state where, cool, I'm certified now, I'm a Scrum Master, whatever that means. But it's really on the team that's inviting anybody with any degree of certification or non-certification in their history to figure out if this person's worth a damn or not, or if they're worth the risk to come onto a team or not. I mean, a certification to me, and you know, I'm not going to smash any one organization or another. I'll just take them all in one swipe. It doesn't mean anything. It just means that your check cleared and that you're able to pass a test. Doesn't mean you know how to think on your feet. Doesn't mean you know how you understand the principles of the practices that it takes to actually incrementally deliver value in a software organization. It literally means that you had a couple thousand dollars in your either expense account or your personal checking account, and you could pass the test.
So would Ryan, would you say, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, Jay, but would you say that that's on the certification companies if they're just putting it out there, or is it more on the people that are taking the certs to define sort of what the value is in getting certified? So to me, I would go ahead.
More power to the organizations that put them out there, because I mean, there's a chart that I put together, and it's up on the Coalition site right now. There is a money grab to be had. If you can come up with three letters and charge a couple thousand dollars to get 20 people to show up on a regular basis, go do it. Make your dollars. But I think it's really on the integrity of the organization that is looking to bring people on to do a value assessment. Just like if you're going to be in a mergers and acquisition position within your company to buy another company, you should be doing same due diligence with anyone that you invite into your organization if you respect team's culture and throughput. Make sure that you're bringing the right person in. Certification, to me, bear very little weight in the decision of whether or not I invite someone into an organization. Do they have the right mindset? Are they on a continuing journey of learning? Or are they just somebody that's looking to be a warm body on a team? I mean, that certification doesn't validate any of that.
Well, I'm glad you feel that way, Ryan, because I'm definitely qualified to start an Agile release train and totally talk about, say, 4.0. But I totally crushed an interview and didn't get the job because I didn't have SPC right after my name. So there are the companies that doesn't matter how talented you are, doesn't matter how articulate you are, doesn't matter how much you know the practices and processes, they're going to sometimes shut you down just because you don't have those two letters or those three letters after your name.
That's a good point.
Then I'll go ahead and try and get you a gig then, James. I'll find you a team that's willing to take you in for your resume, not for the letters after your name. I mean, some of the best of I have about 25 developers in my org that report into my group. And I think of the top 5 to 7 developers I have, probably half of them have college degrees in computer science. The other half don't. It's not what you have accomplished as far as it relates to certifications or degrees or anything of that measure. It's what have you actually done in industry? What can you prove in your resume? What can you prove in your Git history? What open source projects have you contributed to? What projects have you or what products have you delivered in a meaningful way? Right?
So I'm gonna switch gears a little bit to Troy. And I know, Troy, I think you just sat for your PSM fairly recently. You've gotten a couple. You've done the cert game fairly recently. So I'm assuming a lot of these exams are fresh in your mind. What are your thoughts on the, you know, why does everyone offer it? Have you noticed a difference between A and B enough demonstrably so to make it say I should get both or I should get neither? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so let's start with the coalition. Ryan, you posted a picture of something like 400,000 CSMs versus 5,000 CSPs.
Right? Yeah.
And I've been co-training the CSM, working on my CST certification. And so I have quite a bit of experience. I've done four so far, and I observe one, so I've been really involved in five in the teaching kind of manner. So I don't know exactly why it's only such a small percentage of people that have gone for their CSP, but to me, the people that have gone for the CSP are the people that I would kind of consider first over just people that have a CSM, obviously, because those are people that are more serious about it. You have to have at least, I think, 4 years experience. You have to be involved in the community and all this stuff like that, right? So as far as what the current certifying bodies, I mean, I have certs from Scrum Alliance, from Scrum.org, and from PMI, right? I kind of feel like the CSM is, I know people hate on it because the title Certified Scrum Master kind of sounds like you're an expert now. I get that. But to me, that's an entry level class that I find actually has a lot of value and benefit to the students that I've been co-training.
But Troy, you also are co-training with Dave Pryor. Like,
correct.
Dave knows his stuff and he definitely brings in more than just the Scrum stuff.
Sure.
Like there are some CSTs out there that their class is abysmal. And I was texting on my phone and I missed the discussion on the Agile Manifesto during my CSM.
Okay.
So
okay. Like, well, I think James is onto something there too. I mean, not all CSM trainers are created equal. I mean,
true.
Without going deep into who I got trained by, mine was horrendous. I think I learned more just reading the 17-page Scrum guide or 16-page Scrum guide than I got in the 2 days. And literally, I think the CSM test is a joke. It's basically a hold a mirror under somebody's nose and see if they fog it, you know?
So, right.
And conversely, but I will say conversely, Ryan, you make a great point because I will agree that the test was nothing to write home about. It was very vanilla and easy to pass, but I got – my trainer was really good when I took mine. And as a result, I got more out of that class because it was more fruitful discussion.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that was the point I was trying to make. I think, you know, as a group, whenever somebody comes to me and they ask me about Scrum Master certification, I usually don't start with, oh, it's crap. I usually say, if you're going to do it, here are the folks that I would look to. And, you know, Troy, just because of our, I'll go with friendship, relationship, or our acquaintanceship, Dave Pryor is usually one of the first names that comes out of my mouth just because of the conversations we've had about the approaches that he takes. The same is true for the CSPO. I know that he's doing some advanced concepts that most trainers don't train simply because they've been so out of practice they don't even understand.
Right.
And no, I got you. Sorry, Andrew.
No, that's okay. Just real quick. For me, I took my CSM after having a good amount of years under my belt, and I actually found it more valuable that I had the experience taking that class because I was actually able to apply that knowledge in a different way. So when I took my CSM, I found it actually valuable, even getting back to the basics to understand sort of the practices that I've been doing to support sort of that certification. So to me, it was of value, but I brought knowledge into the class as opposed to coming in with zero experience.
So can I talk about just briefly the value? I think specifically if we're going to talk about CSM, because that seems to be the one that people tend to bash the most. Okay. So the value I think it brings is one, it teaches people Scrum from the Scrum guide, right? Where I have worked with Scrum Master who have never read the Scrum Guide. Okay. I've worked with quite a few who have never read the Scrum Guide. So the fact that this is a 2-day class where you can go and learn it from the book, I think is valuable. Also, I agree with you about the Agile, the manifesto part, for instance, when I just did CSM, I spent an hour on the manifesto, and that may be a lot longer than what some other people do, but I know as hell the value of it. So we did a full hour just on the manifesto alone, which I thought people seemed to really enjoy. But you're right. Every trainer has a different way of doing it, right? To me, though, one of the biggest benefits of it is the ability for the students to interact with a trainer who has a lot of experience in the field and ask them questions. It's also the hardest part of the job. As Dave Pryor would tell you if you talk to him about it, is that he's been doing this for years now, and every class he gets questions that he's never gotten before. So, and he may not know the exact answer because everyone's experiences are different, right? So that's one of it's the hardest part of the job, but it's also, I think, maybe the most beneficial for students because they get to kind of talk to an expert for 2 days about how to apply this stuff in their jobs. And I think that's very valuable. And so I enjoy it, and I enjoy teaching it too.
So I would almost ask this though as well, saying that, you know, we're talking about Scrum, but Scrum doesn't necessarily equal Agile, right? It's a piece of it. So, you know, when you go through a CSM sort of certification, does that enable you to be Agile, or does that just provide you the level of understanding of how to operate a Scrum?
Well, I would say, I guess it's up to what the trainer is actually teaching, but I mean, Scrum is a practice to achieve agility. Shout out to Mike McCullough. So Scrum is a practice to be agile, right? So the concept of self-organization, you know, cross-functionality, these kind of things, and the business working with the technical side on a daily basis, Scrum just provides those things. So I would say yes, but that doesn't mean that you're going to be the best agilist in the world, but at least it's the start.
I mean, if you really want to go and get a good agile overview and get your CSM all at one time, not to plug the advanced agile class that Alistair Coburn runs, but you can go do a 3-day training with Alistair Coburn and walk out of that thing with one hell of a education on what agile is and your CSM.
But Jay, your question was about the other certifying bodies too. So I've taken the PSM-1 and PSM-2, and I know, Andrew, you have as well. I can say the PSM-2 was, I really actually enjoyed that because I found it kind of challenging in a way. Like, I felt like you really had to have experience to pass that test. It's not just about book knowledge. So I would say scrum.org did a pretty good job on that exam.
So Ryan made a remark that I think we should touch on when he was talking before, and he said, you know, is the importance of a certification, is it the responsibility of the group offering the course that adds the value, or is it the emphasis coming from the person taking the course that adds the value? I think there's a third side that we didn't even touch on, which is what about the companies that are hiring and use that as a bar, even like James made a remark that he was qualified. He's one of the more qualified people I know, but he was passed on for a role because he doesn't have an SPC. I mean, do certs really do anything except, I mean, get you through the HR software that's scanning resumes? I mean,
I think you can learn a lot from getting a certification though. Dick, you could just generally, you may learn things you don't know. So I think there's a lot of value there, but you're right though. I mean, a lot of people interviewing may not know much about Agile, so they just, or people that at least scanning resumes, they're going to look for people with certs first.
I bump it up to when the PMP came out, right? Everywhere I was interviewing as a project manager, they wanted to know if you had your PMP. And I know guys that don't have any formal training or any formal certification and can probably launch a space shuttle. And yet I know guys that do have a PMP and they couldn't find water falling out of a boat in the middle of the Atlantic.
Okay.
So bear with me for a second here, but the nature of humans is that we measure things on the laziest level possible. Right. When you talk about agile teams and you ask them about capacity or you ask them about throughput, they normally measure against story points. And hopefully everyone listening and everybody talking knows that story points is probably the worst way to measure a team, but it's the one that we do the most because it's easy and we're lazy as human beings to measure on that. So as nothing against recruiters or anyone in HR, anyone that's screening resumes, but the laziest and easiest way to figure out if somebody has the bare minimum knowledge that it takes to take to be in an Agile job is to scan for certifications. And you know, it's not, again, no knock on them, but hey, if this guy has a CSM, he probably knows a little bit about Scrum. That doesn't mean jack, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm sorry, Troy, you and I can have this conversation, but having a CSM doesn't mean you understand Agile. That literally just means that you passed the Scrum test.
I agree with you 100%. We're on the same page.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think this actually ties to Gifford is always bringing up, you know, lean HR, right? James and I have had that conversation a couple of times about how it really is when you have people hiring for a technology role that don't actually understand the technology they're hiring for, it can get very ugly very quickly. And like you said, Ryan, we'll go to the lowest mean possible. And the easiest way to do it is look for a couple letters after their name.
Yeah. But I mean, everyone that listens to this should realize that they're now AUC, Agile Uprising Certified, right?
What was Josh's line? 5,000 PDUs or whatever?
Modern Agile points or something like that.
But I think this also identifies a gap in the market too, where we're putting, you know, certified people within the field, but what are we focusing on for the organization? Is it to put a bunch of people that are certified, or sort of what's the next step? So now you're certified, now what? You know, so how are the organizations sort of defining what agility means within there, and how are we promoting sort of that gap around what are we building? Like, we're just not building software. We should also be building sort of the vision for the company, as well as figuring out how to create leaders within an organization to support a broader message, which I don't think, you know, there really isn't a certification for that. Maybe I'm on to something. Maybe I'll create one. But
it's called the CAL. It's Certified Agile Leader. Scrum Alliance obviously left.
I'm looking at it a little bit of a different lens, I guess, a little more abstract. But I think there's not a lot of focus on how to continue to do development within a company to create sort of that next level. And it's not getting more certifications.
And I do agree with you that, and I don't want to drag us into like plumbing, but I'm going to drag us there, because when we look at these certifications, you look at like things like the plumbing industry or electrical, you know, electricians, you know, there's a very thought out process to actually become a craftsman, to actually like that path to craftsmanship. So like going from an apprentice to a journeyman to a craftsman, like the fact that like there's a path there in software development. There's not that it's called out or, you know, documented, but like there, if you look at the way that they used to raise up software developers there, it was almost like an apprenticeship kind of path. Like we as Agile practitioners, we go and get these certifications, but organizations need to be understand that just because you have a CSM, you're technically, you know, an apprentice. At that point in time, you're an apprentice with Agile. And that's one of the things that I do like that scrum.org did. So as you start to get through that, you got the PSM1, you got the PSM2, you got the PSM3, like each level of that is explicitly harder than the first. And then it starts actually tying in practical experience so that you're actually giving written essays about how you've actually practically used Scrum in an environment and its benefits. Not that Scrum
but
is
But I think there's some tacit knowledge that, not even tacit knowledge, like there's a very specific lens that we're trying to develop Scrum Masters, right? And Scrum Master is one role on teams that are generally going to be about 5 to 7. So we're focusing on like 10 to 20% of the overall team with like 90% of the focus. If you look at the CSD, which is probably the least acquired Scrum certification, the actual team members, the folks that are writing the code or testing the code or delivering the code, there's very little focus given to that. And I think that's a problem. That's an indictment against the whole approach to certifications. We want to certify these folks that have the, I'm sorry to say, but probably the least technical impact on the outcomes of work.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you, but you know what? I mean, if we go back and if we could get in that hot tub time machine and go back to 1996 and actually talk to Kent Beck and say, dude, you need to monetize this thing. You don't need to open source it. You need to freaking cert the crap out of this. Where would we be with the development stack today? Like, maybe we would actually have more certified developers delivering with more technical practices. But if we see that where we haven't actually certified it, monetized it, and made it a commodity, we've lost it. And it we scrape around the bottom of the barrel at the bottom of the paper pile to find it. I mean, there's gems in Crystal Clear that just died because Alistair didn't monetize it. We've XP petered out in like 2004 in the US because it wasn't monetized and it had a bad name. But imagine where it would have been if they hadn't open sourced it.
I think you're, I mean, I'm not disagreeing. I'm not agreeing or disagreeing. I think you're making a lot of assumptive guesses in there, or they're just painting with a broad brush, because there are strong XP practices in the US. They didn't completely die out. And I don't know that monetizing or not monetizing certain things would have improved or negated any of the, what I consider to be issues that we face today. I think we tried to create systems to add labels to people to validate them in a way that does not actually do a great service of validation. I think that the onus of gauging or assessing somebody's ability to work on an agile team, most of the corporate focus has been on certifications. And my position is, and always has been, ignore the certifications and let's talk to the person. Let's understand who they are. Let's understand their mindset. Let's figure out what they've done in the past, where they want to go. I mean, Andrew, you said that you waited a long time to get your first Agile certification. You probably had, I've known you well enough there, you probably had at least 4 to 6 years of Agile experience before you got your first certification, Joe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the fact is, you probably got passed over for jobs for somebody that had 1 year experience but 2 or 3 certifications. There's something fundamentally screwed about that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I had to go the certification route to start to be able to at least get in the door to even
now. If that doesn't jump off the
showcase
page,
anywhere.
Problem. Yeah, I mean, if that doesn't jump off the page as a problem to people, then you know, I'll just hold my breath.
But I would say it's not a problem with the certification. It's a problem with the people hiring.
It's a problem with the organization.
No, I agree with you.
Wake up, Fortune 100.
I completely agree.
So we're just about hitting the halfway point. So I want to sort of pivot the conversation and hit the second half of what we wanted to discuss. And this is, we talked about tying this into the future of Agile, right? So for those listeners, there was a long-running conversation a bunch of us had over an IAM client where we were talking about where is the future of Agile. And I want to start off, before we get in, with some quotes from the conversation. So one of the quotes that we got was, Agile will only go as far as the leadership lets it. Make no mistake about it. Every org has that choice. The ones that embrace it what it will take to survive in the digital age. We had someone else say, I think we're a long way off from Agile as we know it, dying or changing. So many people don't even get the basics right. It's actually quite sad. One of the more well-written ones was, there is no future of Agile. It will be dead, but just rebranded as something else. It will essentially be a combo of business agility, meta frameworks, and the lean startup. Alignment across the organization, soup to nuts on strategy and execution. And the last comment that I wanted to start with, the last quote was, for me, it's about coaching leadership within an Agile organization and how to keep developing people, to which someone had a wise-ass remark was, no, you're wrong. It's actually just going to be certs.
Where did this come from?
This came from our conversation.
This is directly from the Coalition, man. Literally, this is – Jay just read the entire thread from the Coalition.
And I wanted to –
Did I write any of that?
Yeah, but I'm not going to attribute any to you right now. You were the one who said, actually, it's just going to be certs.
So you can't read sarcasm in text. There's obviously a high degree of sarcasm.
Obviously.
You got to use sarcasm font. You got to use the sarcasm font.
Right.
Italics is sarcasm, bro.
Yeah, sarc on, sarc off. So, but to this point, though, where is Agile going? You know, Pragmatic Dave had that whole article, which is a great article about, is Agile dead? We have to stop using it, the word Agile, as a noun. James, I'm going to start with you. Where do you think we're going? What's in the mix for the future, if you can prognosticate at all?
If I can prognosticate, yeah. All right.
Don't try and spell that. You won't get it right.
No, I'll totally push for that. At some point in time, Agile is going to diverge. I mean, if you look at the world, there is going to be the cert world, and then there are going to be the modern people like Josh, Alistair, who are pushing getting back to the basics and the fundamentals. There are the camps that are dragging in the lean startup. So you're going to have the dogmatic cert master, scrum master, safe SPCs, and you're going to have those camps of organizations that are adopting basically what I'm considering entry-level Agile. I mean, until you really start blending practices and actually looking at what are my goals of my organization and figuring out how to tie in, delivering customer value, getting away from like traditional funding models, like until you start to embrace that, until you start trying to make people awesome, if we get into modern Agile, promote safety, like we're going to start to see this camp where organizations start to really embody this stuff and start to look at totally different organizational structures that are going to let them get work done. And as I've been working through the value stream containers concept that I've been actually putting into practice, I've been spending a crap ton of time researching W. Al Gore and basically the people that make Gore-Tex. And the culture there and the way that they actually work and collaborate and transparency, if people would actually do a cult, like look at that culture, that's potentially the next foray into what you actually look at as an Agile organization, where it's focused on teams and transparency and all the things that are just missing from most of the Fortune 500. So you're going to have the Fortune 500 doing the rudimentary Agile, and then you're going to have the rest of the people that are going to start doing more out of the box things, and eventually you're going to start to see just continued disruption in that Fortune 500 with people actually getting into true agility and true changes in that. And we'll probably move away from the term actually agility in the future.
So to segue off that, Andrew and I have had a couple discussions, and he always leans a lot on coaching leadership, and it's, I'm not coaching Agile, I'm coaching people. Andrew, what are your thoughts? Where does it look like we're going? If you could have a crystal ball, what would you think?
So for me, and I've had this conversation with a few folks recently, it seems in my experience that, and we touched on it earlier, just sort of the gap around, we're so IT focused on how to deliver, you know, from an IT perspective, but as an organization, sort of what's the goal? And Agile can span outside of IT. And if you want to touch on safe, I mean, the core pillar, the foundation of safe is leadership. I mean, that truly is what it is built off of. So if you don't have that leadership alignment or that constant, and to me, that's where safe sort of falls off, but that constant building of future leaders within the organization and people that can influence change, right? And sort of create the influence and how to empower people to want to create influence as opposed to just manage something. It's an interesting sort of gap. And I don't see that piece being focused on at all. And I tend to like to focus on that because it's, you know, that sadist part of me, but literally, for me, the next step in sort of the agility discussion is how is that being evolved in the future, or is that even of interest to anyone other than me?
No, it's totally an interest of mine. I'm going to send you that. I'm going to send you that article I was talking about with around W. L. Gore and their their culture. And we can put it in the show notes as well, but it's kind of tailoring right in with what you're talking about with leadership, Andrew.
Yeah. And while we're talking about leadership, I know some of the, since I've gotten my, dip my toe in the Agile stream, some of the most fascinating, even books that I've had recommended to me are not the Agile readings per se, but the stuff around leadership. And I want to talk to Ryan a bit about this because he's recommended to me stuff like Leaders Eat Last. I think it was John Kotter's Accelerate. We all were at that Jurgen Apello conference. So, and Ryan, I know you actually took a lot of that Management 3.0 stuff and you put it into practice. So what are your thoughts on where we're going as a, where Agile itself is going?
You know, as the other guys were talking, I'm sitting here and I'm trying to think of how I want to frame it. And I wish I had some compelling outline in my head of how I'd answer this. And I think, to me, it comes in different horizons. The first and most obvious horizon to me, given my history and given what I do on a day-to-day basis, is the team level. Do I think that what the teams are doing today is going to be significantly different in 5 or 10 years? I hope a little bit, but for the most part, if you fast forward 5 or 10 years, my hope is that the teams are just continuing to perform those technical practices in a more advanced way, hopefully DevOps and continuous integration and all of the cool stuff that helps us find an error check faster. It has evolved in ways that we can't envision. And those teams are much more technically positioned to win. I think I actually agree significantly with what Andrew was saying about leadership and business agility. I think that we tend, I mean, going back to what I said earlier, a lot of the metrics and measures that we put in, especially in large enterprise, is generally driven by, lazy trailing indicators, things like story points and number of stories that go through the engineering team because they're easy to measure. Measuring things such as business value delivered and opportunity cost and total lead time instead of just cycle time through engineering, those measures matter. And I think a leadership shift to understand what the total system of delivery looks like versus just the engineering team, I think that's something that's going to have to evolve. And the companies that ignore that are going to continue to lose market share and eventually become irrelevant. And then, the next piece, I think, is just an evolution of the way that we look at management and the way that we look at recognition, organizational empathy. Things that Jurgen talks about in his book. I mean, I make no bones about it. As much as you position me as the minister of hate, or however you position me at the beginning there, Jay, which I'll own that. Yeah, I can get frustrated and bitter. But I think the reality is this: there's a wide gap between people that are pretenders and posers in the Agile space, and those that actually get it and are performing and are executing. And the ones that get it are going to be attracted to the organizations that practice empathy, that allow for a lot of the intrinsic motivation, the growth, and the training opportunities to become even more awesome. And those organizations are going to have to start realizing that the talent pool that we're choosing from is already small, and the ones that actually are significantly better is a subset of that smaller set of population. And I think that the organizations that embrace that, understand that, and actually are willing to shift their operating models to a way that'll attract, retain, and promote those that actually understand the concepts that we talk about here are the ones that are going to continue to win. And those that are just going through the motion of cranking out features and cranking out lines of code are going to continue to just die on the vine. So I think those are like the three main levers that we're gonna see. Hopefully the teams stay consistently better and they increase as technology increases, business agility improves, and that the overall organizations start paying more careful attention to creating organizations of high empathy, high safety, and high security and transparency.
Awesome. That sounds like a framework. You should create a cert for that.
And Ryan, to sort of build on that and some of the stuff you said, Jay, I'm a huge Zig Ziglar fan. I read a lot of his books and sort of enjoy his spin on leadership. And it's funny because he actually talks about the difference between a manager and a leader. So just because you manage doesn't necessarily constitute you as being a good leader. So, you know, one of his quotes is you can lead a horse to drink, but you can't manage him to drink or manage it to drink. So I think there's also a disconnect there where you have people in positions of management that aren't necessarily fit to lead because they think that that's the same thing.
It's a good point. But,
I mean,
James.
But isn't that some of the, I mean, that's part of the syndrome of larger companies. I mean, managers are usually put in a spot because they're one hell of a firefighter. And they put them around a group of people because they know that they can actually fight the fires to keep a group of people delivering, as opposed to actually putting a person in there that cares about growing his people, what their career growth is, and, you know, they're there to actually just clear organizational impediments and make people awesome.
Yeah, that's a excuse me, James. That's a long running problem. I've always said that becoming a manager is like having a kid or adopting a dog. Just because you can and you think you can doesn't mean you should or you're qualified for it. It's a totally different mindset. Troy, I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on the topic. And because I know you're doing coaching and you're also doing Scrum Master stuff. So what do you think? Where do you think things are going? You're seeing a lot of stuff at the base level.
Well, I know we were talking about where things are going. There's been a lot of debate about Scrum. And I know I just listened to that Modern Agile podcast yesterday. So we can talk about that. I mean, your question about my role as a Scrum Master coach. So I'm a Scrum Master of one team and a coach. Not on the team, but a coach for another team where I'm working currently. And I would say the roles are different, obviously. But what I'm doing as a coach on the one team, I'm also doing as a Scrum Master on my team, plus just a lot more, right? So I kind of feel like any good Scrum Master is going to promote XP practices, technical practices, facilitating pair programming sessions, mob programming sessions, things like that. Even though you don't have to be the most technical person. So I don't know whether you want to call it a Scrum Master or an Agile coach or just Agile leader or whatever, wherever it's going to go, or if that name Agile just goes away in general. I don't know if the roles are going to be that much different. I mean, the titles might be different, but ultimately you need people that can coach, they can facilitate, that can teach, that can lead. So you guys think that's going to change at all?
I do sort of think that you're right. I think that whenever someone thinks Agile, and I know Ryan maybe was alluding to this before, people think Scrum. That's the first thing they think of. So you end up with Scrum Master, Scrum Trainer, Scrum Coaches, where I think you're onto something there, Troy. I think the role, the title becomes transcendent. It doesn't even get married to the word Agile. Again, like Dave Thomas says, you know, we need to stop using the word Agile as a noun. It's not a noun. But I think you're right. I think that is going to change somewhat.
Right. So I don't know. I mean, the future of Agile and the future of Scrum, I know there seems to be some recently, some hate against Scrum. And I know everyone has different opinions on that. I don't know why though, personally, like I don't see why. I think it's a good framework, but it's just, if it's right for you, then it's right for you. If it's not, it's not, but I don't know why you would hate on it.
I don't know that there's hate on Scrum. I shouldn't say that. Personally speaking, I don't think I hate on Scrum. I think I actually said this in the Modern Agile podcast. If not, I said it after the podcast itself. I just challenge any framework that bases its foundation on empiricism, and it was written in 96 and really hasn't fundamentally changed itself. And what are we at now, 21 years? Like it's old enough to drink, and other than adding the Scrum values last year, I don't know that the thing's changed a damn bit in 21 years.
Right. No, I think that's a valid argument. I don't know what the right answer
I don't know if it has to change. So I think we're trying to force feed Scrum in a different way. Where are we truly embodying the values? So if we get away from the values, the scrum breaks down. So I thought it was interesting when we had, and this is a precursor to a future podcast that's being released hopefully next week with David Anderson. I thought it was an interesting point of view that he said when we sort of asked him, you know, when he approaches the situation, what would have him choose Kanban over Scrum? And his answer was interesting to, it informed me of a different sort of point of view. And I thought, again, have we truly moved away from the values of Scrum because we're looking at it as an implementation, a way to implement work to optimize a system? Or are we looking at ways to optimize a team as well as, you know, create optimization within the organization? And that could just be another way to do it.
So if you look at Scrum, what it really is, I mean, going back to the values, Andrew, what you were just talking about, one of the reasons why I think it's a really good framework and why it works is it has specific roles that are necessarily needed, but can be used to help achieve agility. Okay, going back to that. So, so for instance, you're right. You have the product owner role, which is kind of a putting the business with the technical team on a daily basis. Right, that's one of the key principles of Agile. Right, so that is just built into Scrum. Then you have the Scrum Master, who's a servant leader, and servant leadership is another thing that's fundamental to Agile. Then you have self-organization. Then you have cross-functionality, teamwork. All these things are, I think, paramount to being Agile to me. So I don't see really what's wrong with it, I guess.
But I also think we use the term path to agility. I have yet to, I know what my path to agility is, but do organizations even know what that means? So we may say their path to agility, but how many organizations, I mean, we have five individuals on the phone that have a broad range of experience. How many companies have you worked for that have truly defined what their path to agility is? And not just saying over the, you know, next 5 years, but even from a year standpoint, in the next 6 months, we want to do X. In the next, you know, 12 months, we want to be here, to feed into sort of how you would want to structure that work or that value, you know, proposition to say, we are delivering value because we've defined these goals up front for our agility path.
So
the cynic in me wants to point you to a story where I was talking to an executive that was trying to get me to move over to their organization, and they said they want to be 80% agile by 2018. So that's their path to agility. It quickly ended with me telling them they didn't know what the hell they were talking about.
I want to be 64.3% agile with a distribution. Oh, my God.
Where's the agile Gantt chart?
No, I think, I mean,
it's the agile Afghan, man.
No, honestly, it was a Gantt chart, which broke my heart. But here's the reality. I struggle to understand if the organization needs to know what that path to agility is, because at the top level, when you know, in my experience, when you're talking to the C level or the one under C level, I don't think they actually care. I think what they care about is making sure that they're providing value. And you know, to be a little bit more blunt, I think they're trying to make sure that they have a job next year and that the board or the stakeholders or the stockholders are happy with the job that they're doing. Maybe Agile is how they do it, but they really don't care. They just want to make sure that they're staying market competitive, that their products are meeting or exceeding the targets, and that they're keeping the talent that they need to continuously deliver that. Whether Agile or Agility or Lean or whatever it is the means to get them to that. I think they're looking to the teams and the folks that control, like, the investments and the implementation of the investments to manage that.
Well, I have a question.
And I usually –
go ahead, sorry.
Just real quick, Troy, I usually say, well, that's a flawed approach because I can make your waterfall faster too. So if that's sort of the goal is to move faster, there's many different ways to accomplish that, but moving faster does not necessarily add value.
So I'm sorry, I just to be crystal clear, I'm not talking about output, I'm talking about outcomes. And outcomes are usually are driving, you know, more meaningful and sticky growth, better better long-term revenue, higher profitability, better efficiency, and things of that nature. So, yeah, I mean, God only knows what I just said, but I wasn't talking about output, Andrew.
Got it.
So when you guys say Agile is dead, can you really tell me what you mean by that? Because I don't see how the core fundamentals and principles of Agile are going to die out. So are you just saying the name of Agile is dead, or what does that mean?
Well, I got it, and I'll start. I got that remark from an article, again, I think I referenced it, that Dave Thomas wrote, where he talked about, you know, the word Agile should not be used. Agile should not be used as a noun in what we're trying to say, and it's time to retire that word. That's where his article came from, which is where I'm posing it as a question. I don't necessarily agree or disagree with it. But that was the impetus for that line, that remark. Anybody else have some more powerful thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, let me take a swing at this and then I'll be quiet. But I think it is mostly a label and a syntax thing, where the term Agile just no longer means what I think it was intended to mean. I intentionally don't use the term MVP anymore because it doesn't mean what the hell it was supposed to mean. Anyone that was a project manager 3 years ago is now an Agile coach. It's just like we've taken these labels and we've beaten them into the point where they're just noise in the system. Now it's about what can you actually do? Explain this to me. Don't use the cross-cutting term, oh, I'm an Agile person. Tell me what that means and what have you actually done with it. Is Agile dead? I hope not. But, you know, you're going to have to do better than just use a one-syllable word, Agile, one-syllable word to describe who you are with me.
Right. Okay. Anybody else have any thoughts about Agile being dead or dying?
Well,
I mean, it's evolving.
And I think evolving, or I think a lot of times it's sort of the way it was set up for how the company defines what Agile means to them. So I deal with a lot of companies coming in where it was sold as something, and literally that sell doesn't really align with any of the values of being Agile. It's just, it doesn't sort of match up. So you're in a constant state of combat. And it's a challenge when you go back to sort of the certification machine, where you're looking at a revenue, generating revenue and sort of making money. So you have companies that are selling and branding Agile in a way that, in my opinion, I don't believe that it was supposed to be sold.
Okay. All right. James, any thoughts?
I mean, we've ultimately, I mean, for the most part, the value statements, they're pretty clear cut. I just see that a lot of the practices are going to probably evolve, and it does come to the context of the organization and what they value. I mean, if you look at, I mean, one of our members works at a company that I interviewed with, and they're straight up talking to their Agile COE person, the head of their Agile COE. It's, we're doing safe by the book, and that's our path. And we have a renegade group that has decided that they're more mature than safe and would like to inspect and adapt and move away from some of the practices of safe. How would you reel them in? Like, there are companies right now that are just going to, look, I mean, the Fortune 100 are literally going, I'm going to buy safe. I'm going to install it like a software package on a server, and I'm going to send it to my users and let them deal with it. Like, so that's why I'm saying in my previous statement earlier in the podcast is, we're going to have pockets of agility where we've transcended. We're actually continuously finding better ways of delivering software by doing it and helping others do it. And then we're going to have, here's what the cert says. We're installing this in our organization. We're going to accept the 20 to 30% better that we're going to get. So this is why I'm saying that agility as it was when we talked about it in the early 90s and 2001, when we brought the manifesto together, there is going to be a divide. There's going to be the people that relied specifically on certifications and what that means and what the book says. And there's going to be everybody else that, you know, that starts tailoring towards the heart of Agile, that starts moving into modern Agile, that starts looking at growth, that starts looking into meta frameworks. Like, there will be a divide in Agile, and the titles ultimately should go away. I mean, we should stop talking about agility. If you look at, is it Michael Soda? How do you say is the guy's last name?
Sahota.
My CIO, well, one of the 85 local or global CIOs that this company has, doesn't really care about agility. Like, he cares because it's a way to efficiently get work done. But when we're talking about it, I don't need to talk about agility. I need to talk about, what are we trying to achieve? Are we trying to achieve faster time to market? Are we trying to validate that we're building the right product? Are we so agility as a term, we could probably take that thing out back and shoot it, but it's going to be eventually replaced by another buzzword. And then we will need to take that. Eventually that buzzword will get overwhelmed. I mean, Ryan just touched on the MVP. Like, we need to kill MVP. It's been bastardized enough that it has no value. So now I start talking about minimum marketable feature.
Right.
Because that's some different buzzword that gets the same darn concept in place.
You're putting perfume on the pig.
Yeah, but that's not Agile's problem. That's not Agile's fault. It's just like it's not safe fault if a company adopts or tries to go into a safe model and then decides to figure out a creative way to implement it. I mean, those to me are the individuals that are promoting it as a sort of suicide pact or a silver bullet to solve all your problems.
And
In my humble opinion.
No, I mean,
you have your suicide pack.
I mean, I honestly feel that there are days that I work with a bunch of mindless automatons that I'm waiting to reflash them. I'm going to stick them on the mini USB and reflash their brains to something else. Like, there is definitely challenges when you start getting into larger organizations. Like, you start getting into the Fortune 1000s, and it's a different conversation. It's once you get into those three digits that you start to have problems with what all this means. And it takes the right leadership, as you kind of alluded to a number of times on this podcast, Andrew, that it takes the right leadership to be in place to actually foster the change to actually what agility kind of set out to be in 2001.
It's, so it sounds to me the running thread that we keep going, that we keep hitting up against, or the running theme, when we talk about where is Agile going, is Agile dead, is Agile alive, is Agile a religion, and we don't do that here. That was a quote that I think Joshua Karievsky, Joshua, if you're listening, I'm pretty sure I just said your name right. He had a client say that to him. It was, Agile is a religion and we don't do that here, which is, if we had more time, and we'll quickly run up on time, I think we could really unpack that for quite a while. But it seems to me that the thread is good leadership with an idea and in mind of what they want the end state to be, and the confidence to get it there. And that seems to me that that's the most important thing we all keep touching on, even if it's tangentially, what have you. But we all keep poking about that monster, that it really does come down to leadership, vision, and then courage to take your business to a new level by doing things a little bit differently.
All right. So I agree with that. I was just wondering, going back to our, how do we bring it back? I mean, how do we bring Agile back from the brink of either dying out or whatever the word you want to use? I mean, anybody have any thoughts about that?
I think it's going to naturally happen, and you know, I'm probably channeling my conversations and my learning with Jason Little. I think these things are all cyclical, right? So, a lot of the folks that came up with the Agile mindset that have succeeded are now hitting the point where they're starting to step into those leadership roles. And rather than have a conversation about introducing Agile or making an organization more Agile, you have these people, and I'm sorry, I just used like a noun. I feel like a clown for doing that, but you have these people that just have that now as part of their core DNA, and they're now in these leadership roles where they're not even going to talk about it. It's just going to be part of the organizational method. How do we set up new products? How do we start talking internally? And because of their rearing in good agile teams, they're just going to continue to evolve and mimic those teams at a higher level.
So what you're saying is we need to wait for the meteor to hit the earth again and kill off all the bad leadership.
No, I think that's happening just in general, man. I like honestly think about it. Like every 10 or 15 years, there's a generational turnover, and you know, it's about that time. You're going to start seeing these guys that, and we're just at the doorstep of it now.
Yeah.
You have all these folks that have shown, you know, proven history and proven track records of success in the software industry now entering that upper echelon of leadership. And I think as that continues to happen, the folks that petered out in those waterfall organizations or those fragile groups are going to continue to hang out in middle management or bad companies. The folks that have shown success are now going to they're going to be the shot callers in these forerunners of industry.
I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, now you're starting to see, I mean, I've seen it the last two jobs I've had is you're starting to see people who grew up with the idea of iterative development. It was not foreign to them, who have succeeded in the technology space. And now they are reaching levels of leadership where you're starting to get your higher echelon folks, to your point, Ryan, not to beat a dead horse, you're starting to get higher echelon folks who are totally comfortable with this. It's more second nature to them than anything. And I think that is to steal a Strauss Howe term, you're really looking at like a fourth turning where things are going to turn and you're going to have all these executives who come from technology and who have that iterative experience in their DNA. And I do think that's going to lead a big change. There was I had a coworker remark to me. He used to work at JPMC, and there was an all hands meeting where I think it was Jamie Dimon who got up and said that we're not a bank, we're a technology company that does banking. And his remark was, you know, technology is what differentiates us between every other bank and brick and mortar who does savings and credit cards and loans. So that's what we need to put the emphasis in. So we may even be on a greater, maybe I'm getting, you know, high, you know, on the sound of my own voice, but at a greater, we may be looking at a turning where more companies really put the emphasis in the IT and the technology space, because that's where they're going to differentiate themselves and succeed.
Without sending us down a rabbit hole. Sorry, go ahead, Andrew.
Sorry, Ryan. But just based on that sort of comment and sort of some of the other ones around, you know, the future, the future leaders coming up, I think that people that want to work in a different way will be frustrated and not stay. So retention will be an issue. They'll go seek those opportunities elsewhere to be influential within an organization as opposed to continuing the command and control and do as I'm told.
Yep.
And not be able to add value.
Completely agreed. Yep.
Unless you're constrained by the local job market.
Yeah, there's always an airplane somewhere. And with that, everybody, it looks like we are just about out of time. I want to thank Andrew, James, Troy, and Ryan for taking the time this evening to call in. I want to thank all of our listeners. Does anybody have anything specific to plug or spiel before I close this out?
I would like to plug April 27th and April 28th in Pittsburgh. We'll be doing the second Heart of Agile conference, which all of you guys were at last year. And, you know, it's probably one of the top, you know, five Agile conferences that I attend every single year. You know, there's over 24 sessions of actual speakers. And then there's a total of around 18 hours of actual collaboration with people attending the conference through the collaborative conversation track, where we actually talk about issues that we crowdsource from the Agile community and we actually talk about and try to come up with solutions for. So if you like, this is probably one of the best Agile conferences that I've ever attended that isn't an Agile Coach Camp or, I mean, Agile Coach Camp's probably the next best one. But like, if you're looking for a lot of good information and actual sessions and then actual collaborating with people, like, this is a conference for you. And I don't know how you guys feel about that.
No, I mean, I think it's good. And, you know, if you're on the fence, I might push you away by telling you I've got an A-Hall pass to go out to the Heart of Agile Pittsburgh. So if you don't want to ever deal with me, then that's probably not a good reason to go.
So I would love to hear feedback on sort of this topic. So I would love to see what, you know, the coalition members, you know, sort of feel about this discussion tonight and get some feedback and possibly continue this conversation, because obviously it's sort of passionate from all of us, you know, the individuals on the call or on the podcast tonight. So I would love to hear some feedback from the community as well. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And I think this one will be going up shortly, and we'll make sure we create a thread on the coalition site so everybody can add their two cents. I think this is one of the defining questions of, I hate to sound like, you know, Walter Cronkite, the defining choice of our generation, but it really is a defining question about where we go forward as technologists. So once again, I want to thank all of my co-hosts. I want to thank all of you listeners again for checking us out. If you do like what you hear, I want to remind everybody to please rate us on iTunes. It does help the Uprising podcast show up higher in the search results, which is always a good thing. And once again, thank you for your time and enjoy.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, that was fun.